The only snag was that rumor said he was, or had been, interested in Esme Sweeza. Cassie discounted that. At the Academy, Esme had been a non-entity, even aside from being a prig. Not pretty, with a haphazard set of features topped with fluffy flyaway hair of nondescript brown. The boy had hero worship, that's all it was. And now, if rumor were true, Sweeza was in trouble for being untactful. Cassie could believe that, no question. If she ever had a lover, which didn't seem likely, it would be someone as unspectacular as herself, another non-entity. Probably just as tactless and doomed to as inglorious a career. Still, Esme's present disgrace would make it easier for Cassie to pursue Baron Serrano unhindered. And surely that Serrano grandmother wouldn't want him connected to someone like the bad Lieutenant Sweeza. It would take very little, Cassie thought, to make absolutely sure that no one ever admired Lieutenant Sweeza again. It was getting harder to get up off the floor to use the toilet. Brun realized that, in addition to the pregnancy, she was getting weaker because she didn't exercise much. The compartment would have been small for one person. With an adult woman, a girl, and two small children, it was impossibly crowded. And at any time, one of the men might look in. She could imagine how they would react if they caught her doing real exercises. She tried to make herself pace back and forth, but she quickly ran out of breath and leaned on the bulkhead, panting. The girl watched her with a worried frown, but looked away when Brun tried to smile at her. As Brun had shared more of the work, the girl had accepted that help, but always with reserve. That night, when the lights dimmed, signaling a sleep period, the girl slept at her back, curled around her. Brun woke to a breath of air in her ear. She started to lift her head and felt a gentle push downward.
Elias Madeiro, Merchanter.
Brun squirmed as if trying to find a comfortable position. Merchanter. The Merchanter ship. This girl must be off that ship. Excitement coursed through her. She knew something now.
I'm Hazel.
Then the girl squirmed as if moving in her sleep and rolled away. The rush of joy from those five words burst through Brun. This must have been how Lady Cecilia felt when she first made contact with the world again. A wave of shame followed. Lady Cecilia had been locked in paralysis and apparent coma for months, and months more of painful rehab, and she had been old. Brun was young, healthy.
I am not defeated. I am only detained on the way to victory. So I might bear children for these animals, so I might be a prisoner for months, for years. In the end, I am who I am, and that will not change.
She rolled over with difficulty and looked through narrowed lids at the girl, at Hazel. She had been impressed before at the girl's patience, her consistent gentleness with the little girls, her endless invention of quiet little games and activities to amuse them. But she had given up hoping for any real contact after the first long stretch of days. The girl was too scared. Now she appreciated the courage of this thin, overworked, terrified girl, still a child herself, who cared for two younger children and Brun, who dared, in the face of threats, to say a few words of comfort. She had lost everything, too. Parents, most likely. Were these children even her sisters? Maybe not, but no one could have done more for them. She pushed herself up to use the toilet. On the way back, she noticed that Hazel had rolled over again, as if offering Brun a niche convenient to her ear. Brun lay down, grunting, and pretended to sleep. Her arm slid sideways, touched Hazel's. She twisted. She was uncomfortable, and traced the letters of her name on Hazel's arm before moving her arm away. Hazel turned, burying her face under her hair.
Brun?
Brun nodded. A wave of excitement ran through her. The baby kicked vigorously as if aware of it. Someone besides the men knew who she was, an ally. She had made contact. It wasn't much, but it gave her hope, the first real hope she'd had. The next day, she watched Hazel covertly. The girl seemed the same as always, busy, careful, quiet, patient, warm with the children, and remote with Brunn. When Brandy's restlessness grew toward a tantrum, Hazel intervened, steadied her, and Brunn was reminded of an expert trainer with a fractious young horse. When she thought of it that way, she began to grasp how Hazel was using the children's need to steady herself. She could be calm, she could follow the senseless rules, because she had someone for whom she was responsible.
And who is my responsibility?
The words she had heard from Lieutenant Commander Euless came back to her. If she had been a regular Space Service officer, her duty would have been clear: to escape. Or if that was not possible, to live, gathering information until she could escape. But she wasn't. And even if she had been, even if she pretended to be, was that duty enough to sustain a lifetime such as she faced? What if she never had a chance to escape? The baby inside her moved, as if it were doing a tumbling act. Surely one baby couldn't make that much disturbance. Some people would say that it was her responsibility, but she did not feel that. It had been forced onto her, into her, and it was not hers at all. It was an abomination, as the men claimed she was.
Am I then my own responsibility?
Brunn's mouth soured. Not enough to make a lifetime as a slave tolerable or even bearable. She had spent too many hours already planning how she could escape life, if not these men, once they lowered their guard. Eventually they would. But what if there were a chance, however slim, to keep Hazel and the little girls from her own fate? Somewhere, she was sure, her father was searching. Fleet was searching. It might be years. It might be too many years. But it might not. Hazel was compliant, not entirely from fear, but also from hope. The hope that some help might come. If she had not had some hope, she would never have dared share her name or her ship's name with Brunn. So she, Brunhilde Charlotte Meager, could fix her mind on Hazel and the little girls, on saving them. She did not let herself think again about how unlikely success was. Instead, she began thinking what information she needed and how to get it. And she quit trying to catch Hazel's eye, quit trying to entice her into communication. The last thing she wanted now was trouble for Hazel. Only a few days later, the men came for both of them, and the little ones. Brunn almost panicked. Had they realized Hazel had talked to her? That she had written her own name on Hazel's arm? But they were led along corridors, farther than Brunn had ever gone. Her bare feet were sore. Her pregnancy made her awkward at the hatches. To her surprise, the men were patient, waiting while she lifted one leg, then the other. They helped her down a slanting surface to a space that opened out around her. She looked, her eyes unaccustomed to the distances after those months in the compartment. The docking bay of a space station, it looked like. All around were men, only men. She and Hazel and the two little girls were the only females. The men guided her, gently enough, to a hover chair. With Hazel walking beside her, the men pushed her chair a long distance. Chair and all, she was moved through another docking bay into a shuttle. Only five men now. At their command, Hazel strapped the children into seats and herself into another. The men locked the hover chair down. When the shuttle hatch opened, Brunn smelled what could only be a planet. Fresh air, growing things, animals. Hope rose in her again. Planets were big. If she could once get loose, she could find a way to hide and then to escape. But right now, she could barely stand in this gravity, and the heat almost took her breath away. The men moved her hover chair from the shuttle through a low-ceilinged box-like building and then into a wheeled vehicle, also large and box-like, where they locked the chair down again. It had no windows in back, but up front she could see out, until a partition rose to cut off her vision. Panic choked her. She was alone in that back compartment. Hazel, the only person she knew, hadn't come with her. Hazel wouldn't know where she was. No one would know. She was going to be lost forever.